Welcome to the Australia Sews podcast. This podcast celebrates the Australian home sewing community and shares stories from everyday sewers transforming their lives and their wardrobes. My name is Louise Sherry. Imagine picking up your life and moving to a new country. That's exactly what Annie Stafford recently did. She packed up all her sewing gear, hopped on a plane from New Zealand, and made Australia her new home. In this episode, Annie and I talk about the big move to Australia, of course, attending Melbourne Frocktails, expanding her pattern line, Ford Wardrobe, and possibly even starting a YouTube channel to help people build their sewing confidence. And we also talk about her hilarious Instagram reels. I can't stop watching them. Here's the vivacious Annie. Welcome to the podcast, Annie.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Please tell our listeners what you are wearing today.
So I'm so glad you asked. I am wearing the Rise and Fall turtleneck by Papercut. I have about 7 or 8 of these in my wardrobe. They are winter staple. And I'm wearing a pair of self-drafted pants that I made for myself from a skirt that I had left over from some fabric I made a dress. And they're probably my most worn pants ever in my wardrobe. And they've got little side seam pockets, so very handy.
And how do you do the waist on those pants?
Elasticated.
So you literally just pull them up.
Yeah, and then I've got my little pockets.
Oh, nice. Pockets, yep. Love a pocket.
Always need your pockets.
Lovely. And the turtleneck that you're wearing was actually on my list of things to talk to you about. Because you've got an obsession with that paper cut.
Oh, paper cut patterns by in Nelson. She's based, Katie. So, yeah, I wear a lot of the paper cut turtlenecks because they're just so easy. So easy to make and wear and style. But, yeah, I wear them all the time. They're just so good. And it's only 5 seams on the overlocker that you have to do.
Do you have one in black?
No, I don't.
Do you know why I ask?
Why is that?
Because you've got black glasses, very dark hair, and I thought you could really pull off that vibe.
I could. I get a bit of, okay, so if I do a black one, I'm a bit Steve Jobs. I'll tell you what, I actually bought some black merino to make a black one of these. But it's one of those things that it was like, oh, it's so easy, I'll get to it, no problem, I'll do it. And I've still not sewn it up.
Because something probably took over priority in your sewing queue.
Yeah.
And it just dropped down the line of things to make.
Definitely. But what I've learned is my motivation to sew something lasts about 3 to 5 days. So I need to get it done in those 3 to 5 days. Otherwise, it gets put on hold. It gets put in a waiting pattern until the need for that thing comes back.
Now, I just want to let our listeners know that you are not Australian.
No, I know. I just moved to Australia, though. So I'm new here.
So you're telling me I have to rename this podcast to Australia and New Zealand Sews Podcast because you were born and raised in New Zealand.
No, I wasn't.
Oh. Actually.
I know. So I was born and raised up until I was 2 years old in Manchester. And then from ages 2 till 7, I was brought up in Sri Lanka and then moved to New Zealand. And then it was in New Zealand for Christmas when I was 9 years old that I got my first ever sewing machine. And I remember Christmas Day, I got any scrap of fabric around the house. It was my mum's tea towels. I don't think she was too happy about me sewing up her tea towels, but I got any bit of fabric I could find and just started playing on the sewing machine. And for Christmas, she got me the sewing machine and then she got me a book. My mom and dad, they got me a book that it was like a how to sew for kids. And so it was a perforated spine so you could tear out the pages and sew with the paper. So yeah, I got that. Mm-hmm. And I also got a worm farm, both of which I had up until I left New Zealand 6 weeks ago now. So, yeah. Mm. And then I moved in to this apartment I'm at now. Less than a week ago, I have my sewing stuff setting up, and I have my new worm farm.
Oh,
yeah.
You couldn't live without it.
No, I love a good sewing machine, and I love a good worm farm.
So this was 2004, like you said, you were 9.
2009. Oh,
was it 2004? How old are you now?
2004. So I'm turning 27 next month.
And who would have known that age of 9, your obsession and love of sewing has continued ever since?
Yeah. I've always said I am so thankful and grateful and appreciative that I found something that I love so wholesomely at such a young age.
Can I ask you then about after school? I know you had a gap year, and then you studied fashion at university for 4 years. So what was that course like, and what did you learn from those 4 years?
Absolutely loved it. So I finished high school and I knew I wanted to study fashion. That was all that there ever was for me, but I didn't know where. I went to all of the open days several times in different departments, and I finally settled on a university called Wycliffe because they were fairly small and it was all the departments intermingling together in one building.
And they had a worm farm in the entrance. So that sold you.
Yes. And then they offered night courses. And I kind of dabbled in a few different mediums. So I took the fashion drawing, which was kind of more arts related. And then I did like a fashion course. And that was all about building a collection. So, yeah, I totally, totally loved it. They've now changed it from a 4-year degree into a 3-year degree. So it's a bit different. But my time there, I absolutely loved. I was kind of with my people. And so that developped my sewing skill from a home sewer to a
commercial sewer?
Yeah, I would say it was more so taking you into the commercial sewing fashion industry.
After uni, you got a job in the fashion industry, which was a real eye-opener for you, but not necessarily in a good way. So can you tell us about what that was like?
Of course. I finished uni and in end of 2018, started 2019. And so I had the summer off, and then I started applying for jobs, and then I realized how difficult it was. Like, the jobs you were applying for were like quality control at a clothing brand that the product is clothing. It wasn't we are this fashion staple, it's we are this business selling this product. And so I very quickly realized like that this industry isn't where I want to be, and it isn't it is the best use of what I want to give. And I was at a job for 6 weeks, and after that I was like, no, I'm done. Like, I found out very quickly that this isn't where I want to be. I found that it was a learning opportunity for me to know what I don't want. So
it would have felt very deflating thinking I've just spent 4 years of hard work doing something that I love. And is this reality? Like, how come no one told me this?
Yeah, it was. I remember I was quite upset, but I kept on thinking, God, thank you that I found out so soon. I realized that this isn't where I want to be professionally. Okay, what do I want to do? Well, I love teaching. I love making things at home. I love talking about sewing. I love pattern drafting. I love doing all this stuff. And it had only been seen to me as a hobby. And then I was like, hold up, like, I'm coming up with all these ideas and all these different things that I want to do. And I realized, actually, you know, I'm gonna try this for myself and see what happens. And then I kind of poured more so into my own Instagram and just seeing what happened.
Well, let's skip to that now then. Let's talk about Ford Wardrobe.
Yeah.
So you set that up in, was it 2019?
Yeah, so I finished uni and I was like, righto, onto this.
So this is the name of your pattern business, which helps sewers build up their library of patterns for existing garments or implementing it to their sewing projects.
Yeah.
Did you start out intending to help those beginner sewers find their feet in the sewing world?
I was always going to help the beginner, because when I was at high school doing fabric studies, the way we were taught to present our work was, if somebody picked up your folder knowing absolutely zero, they have to get to your end product by following your method. How do they do that? So that's how I was taught. So that's kind of how I have continued to do my work. And so that is how I teach. And then when I left the fashion industry, I went into teaching beginners. So I've always been around the beginner sewer. And I've noticed that when you talk to someone who's like, oh, I would love to learn to sew, but I just don't know where to start.
You do hear that a lot, don't you?
I think the barrier to entry is the access and the knowledge. Because if somebody's like, I have no idea what I'm doing, oh, I need to go buy a pattern, buy fabric and these threads and notions and everything, but I have no idea what I'm doing. Allowing someone to go into that space, not knowing, is an area that I can help. Because the advice that I would give to someone who's learning to sew is go, don't worry, we've got you. When I was teaching beginners, the first lesson is always, introduce you to your machine. So how do you wind a bobbin? How do you load the top thread? How do you do a straight stitch? And what do all these buttons and knobs and gears, and what do they all do? And
it's a bit scary looking, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. Especially if your machine's making noises that you're like, I don't know if that's a good noise or a bad noise. And I always say to beginners, look, you made a mistake, all good. Like when somebody has to use a seam ripper for the first time, I go, get used to this.
it's your best friend.
It will be your best friend, and you'll use it fairly frequently.
Let's talk about Ford Wardrobe then.
Yeah, sure.
The first garment pattern you've released is the gathered top dress under the Ford pattern range.
Yeah.
Can you just quickly describe what this pattern looks like for listeners?
So what it is a gathered bodice, and then you can add layers to it, essentially. So the top is just the gathered fabric and like a little frill at the end. And then you can add another piece of fabric, like a panel, to make it into the first version of the dress, which goes down to about, like, I'd say just below the knee on myself. And then the second version of the dress is where you add an extra frill on top of that. So it's kind of like a very cottage core.
You wore that to the Melbourne Frock Tales, didn't you?
I did.
Need to talk to you about that.
Oh, yeah. The best part of it is that it's a zero waste pattern as well, which I love. And it's also, you don't need to do any shearing to achieve the gathered look at the top. It's all elasticated.
And you've got a new pockets pattern coming out soon, I believe. It's got five types of pockets. Is that right?
Yes. I am designing and making a pattern currently that a sewer can download and then keep in their pocket library. So when I say library, I mean a stash of patterns that can be inserted into your existing wardrobe or into projects that you're currently sewing.
It's a bit like sleeves, you know, when you find some really good sleeves you like and you want to mix and match.
Yeah, definitely. The great thing about these pockets is that you always need pockets on things. One thing I really pride myself on with my patterns is that I take such time and detail to attention to detail when I create these patterns that I do all the illustrations and I make sure that if a beginner was to pick this up, they would be able to follow it. Because when I first started sewing, I did the Butterick, the McCall's, the Vogue patterns. And you know, it's like attach two front flies, face, back, pocket. And you're just like, with those instructions, it's so off-putting because you're like, I don't know what this means, and I'm gonna have to unpick a lot to get it right. I always like to do my pattern so that it's a very detailed instruction. So it's like, fold the top of the pocket down 3 centimeters and press. And whenever a new term appears, like press, like to sewers, we know what it means. But to a beginner sewer, they're like, press it down with my hand, press, like, what does that mean? I put a glossary in all my patterns. So it has, a little asterisk, and then it says, like, press. This is a term used throughout this pattern to refer to pressing the iron onto the fold or seam you have just created. This allows it to be nice. It goes into a level of detail that makes you go, oh, I understand why I'm doing that and what it does. When I set out sewing in 2019, doing my Instagram, I was like, oh yeah, I could do patterns later on, but I want to learn the things that beginner sewers want rather than me assuming and giving them what I think they need. And it's like, no, you need to realize what they're struggling with to best help them. So I developed kind of a repertoire of ideas and banked them in my mind. So now going forward, I can actually provide good quality things. And so in that, for example, when I was at university, we had to learn how to use InDesign and Illustrator. I remember that was the first subject I genuinely went to my teacher and I cried about, because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. This is so hard. Like, why am I doing this? I'm in a fashion degree, not a graphic design degree. Like, this is terrible. And I remember I had to go to a cafe at night 2, 3 times a week and just completely focus on this thing. And I was watching YouTube videos and everything. And when I left university and I started to do this stuff, the pattern designing and the instructions and everything, like for the bucket hat, several people said to me, oh, just outsource it, like get somebody else to do it. And I was like, no, I want to learn how to do this so that I can get it right for the people that are purchasing this pattern. And I want them to know that I learned a new skill for this. So you can learn a new skill to complete what you want.
You hear a lot of pattern makers saying, originally that's what they do. They want to learn the craft and understand how it all works. And then if they want to outsource it later, they can. But at least they've understood the concept of how it gets done. Can we talk about Melbourne, like moving to Australia? Is this your first time visiting Australia and living in Australia?
Living, yes. Visiting, no. I did a few like little trips with my sister to visit my sister when she lived here a couple of years ago. So basically in 2020, like during lockdown, it was quite difficult. I think everyone had difficult points in different areas of their life, either being social or health-wise or economic or living-wise. Everyone had a bit of a time with it. But with me, I was at home with my parents, so that was a bit of a friction point. So that was the 2020 lockdown, and then the 2021 lockdown, I was living alone, so it was completely different. So I had a little apartment in Greylands, Ponsonby area in Auckland, and I had my own studio at home, and it was fine. But I didn't get to see my sister all that time. But my sister moved back start of 2021, and she was in New Zealand for a year, so I was hanging out with her there. And then my parents decided to move out of Auckland in 2022, so where we're kind of in now. So my parents sold the family home, moved down to Nelson. My sister moved back to Melbourne, and she's loved it here. And so I was kind of like, well, I'm going to be in Auckland alone. I've been here for so long, 18 years, 19 years. And so it was a great time for me to move to Melbourne for new job opportunities, new social
New
opportunities.
beginnings.
And it was kind of like, look, at the time, I'm 26. I have the flexibility to up and leave. I was only renting, so it was a great time for me to move over here. And so I'm happily settling into Melbourne. I love the creative scene here. It's amazing. Like, I remember the first time I drove into, because I'm in Fitzroy, Collingwood area, and I was kind of like, I came into this neighborhood and I was like, oh, my people. Like, it was the creative scene. It was the fabric shops. It was the art stores. It was everything that I needed. And so started looking for apartments fairly quickly here. And yeah, so I've been in my apartment that I'm in now less than a week.
It's so such a whirlwind. Has it kind of hit you what you've actually done to your life? You've kind of blew up your life.
No, I don't think of it as like blowing up my life and all that. I find it as the time was right. The ability to do so was good. And I'm moving into a space from a place of strength rather than weakness. There are all these things I want to do and I want to get really stuck into them.
So let's talk about it. Yeah, what are your plans?
So I'm still in the stages of setting up everything. So that's good. But moving into a new apartment less than a week, I only got a chair from yesterday. I only got my new ironing board here yesterday. So not even set up my sewing machine. Yeah.
I heard you got an Audi sewing machine because you couldn't bring your sewing machine from home.
So back in New Zealand, I had an industrial sewing machine. So it was one of those ones that set into the table, like oil and things and all
cool.
that. And it was brilliant. But obviously, I couldn't bring it over. And so I sold it and I came to Melbourne with two boxes and a suitcase.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so...
Was there any fabric in those boxes?
Well, the fabric actually came back with my sister who came 6 months before.
Oh, okay.
She had a container and she's like, oh, if there's anything you want to pop in there, go for it. I have, I would say, it's three big vacuum pack bags. And then I would say four smaller vacuum pack bags. So it's all the fabric that I've collected over the years. That I was like, this is a non-negotiable. This is coming with me.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a Liberty.
Liberty, Liberty, Liberty. Sorry, I shouldn't say that, but you do love Liberty.
I do love my Liberty because it's so me. It's everything that I love. It's the color. It's the florals. It's the pattern. It's the overall aesthetic I just love. And there's so much I want to do with it, but it's such a precious fabric to me that I'm just like, no, I really need to think about this before I go anywhere near this with a pair of scissors because I'm not getting this wrong. So yeah, I brought all my fabric over earlier on in the year. So it's now a case of going through it and going, oh, I want to do this and that and this. And the merino for the turtlenecks is in there and it will get done. It's just a matter of getting them patterns because all my patterns were in storage and folded and disorganized. So that's another thing I need to do today, which is
it's exciting.
Get all my patterns out as well.
So your plans, and I don't know if I've got this right, are you thinking of doing a YouTube channel?
Yeah. So a YouTube channel is something I've thought about for a long time, purely because a lot of people are visual learners rather than a paper-based learner. No matter how good the illustrations are and the instructions are, people like to watch it get made. And also, I love watching sewers make things on YouTube. It's amazing. So making a YouTube channel is something I really want to do for Ford Wardrobe, as in patterns, but also for talking about my sewing. So, for example, like I have a blue coat that I lined with the Liberty fabric. And it's something that I love talking about. And I was like, you know what? I really want to make a video explaining why this is so amazing. So that's another reason the YouTube channel will start up. And also I'm very organizational based, and how I set up my studio is to achieve the maximum efficiency.
Awesome. So there'll be YouTube potentially, more PDF patterns.
Yeah.
And sewing courses.
Yeah. So I would, this, it kind of all intermingles into a bunch of different things that I want to do, but I would really like to start up online sewing courses so that it can take sewers from, oh, I would love to learn how to sew to, I can do that. And so basically what I would love to create is a online course with, let's say, beginner course, and it has 10 classes. And the first class is learning your machine, knowing what these different things do. And then the second class is, you know, what do all these stitches mean and what do they do? So going through, like, for example, like a straight stitch, learning how to pivot, learning when you're doing all these like intricate little, like, for example, a zigzag stitch. Some people don't backstitch when they do a zigzag. Like, why do you backstitch? When is it unnecessary? And how many stitches do you backstitch for? And how many times, you know, it goes into detail about those little questions that a lot of beginner sewists have. And then it takes you all the way through to creating a top or a pair of pants or, you know, something.
Yeah.
The intermediate would be about how you, like, for example, the first class is zips. And so it's how to pick the best zip for your project. And then the second class is how to insert a zip into a waistband, how to insert a fly front, how to insert an invisible zip.
You're going
to
be busy.
Yeah.
Just back to Melbourne. Did you know, besides your sister, did you actually know anyone?
No.
But you went to Melbourne Frocktail, so I imagine you made a few friends there.
I made so many new friends. Yeah.
So what did you wear? Tell us what you wore and then what Frocktails involved.
So what did I wear? It was a white dress that the Ford gathered dress with the frill at the bottom, so UV. And then I wore a ochre turtleneck, the rise and fall turtleneck. And then I wore a piece I had from my collection, my graduate collection. So it's kind of like a collared robe. It's kind of like a quite dressy robe. It was made in a heavyweight crepe de chine that I had custom dyed to my turtleneck that I was wearing. And I also wore a pair of black tights because Melbourne was very cold. Yeah.
Who did you meet and what was it all about?
Oh, I met a bunch of different people. I bumped into Kylie and the Machine. That was great.
Oh, cool.
I didn't even expect her to be there. And it was lovely to meet her face to face because I've been following her since I started my Instagram. And it was like, oh, like, you're here. Like, you're here. It was so lovely to talk to so many different sewers and so many different owners of sewing-related businesses. So we had a bunch of people there that had fabric businesses or notions businesses or printing services. So that was great because you got to talk to them face to face. And it was kind of like, oh, I saw that skirt that you made and it's still in my saved folder. Have you got any advice for me? So that was really great. And seeing so many different styles of sewing as well, because you obviously curate your style to what you wear and what you like, but going and seeing people wearing sequins and sheer fabrics with ruffles, and it was one of the main lines of questioning throughout the evening was, what pattern is that and where did you get that fabric? And it was great to see where people source their fabrics and patterns from, because a lot of people I found had either bought fabric from, for example, one girl had this gorgeous sheer black and white gingham check print. And I asked her, oh my gosh, that's gorgeous. Where did you get the fabric? And she said, Spotlight. It was $1 a meter on clearance. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, that is amazing. And then you bumped into somebody else that said, oh, this is from my grandmother's stash and she's had it for 50 years, and I found this pattern from a charity shop, and boom, it's
very inspiring.
Yeah, it really, really was. And also just meeting people face to face and, you know, hearing their voice and kind of putting two and two together was really lovely.
Mm.
And also, I actually didn't have a ticket originally to the Melbourne Proctails because I got a message by someone on Instagram saying, hey, I saw that you've moved to Melbourne. I accidentally double booked something for this date. Were you looking for a ticket to Melbourne Proctails?
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh my gosh, like I had just arrived, didn't even register with me about Frocktails or anything like that. I hadn't seen anything up to that point. And I said, yes, of course, I would love to. So that was
wow, really that's awesome.
By chance. And like, it goes to show how amazing the sewing community is, because that person reached out to me and said, hey, you might already, but if you've not, would you like my ticket? And I was like, oh my gosh, of course, that would be great. And I offered to pay for her, reimburse the ticket price for her. And she said, no, just knowing that it's going to good use is all I need. I sent her a link to a bunch of patterns and of the Ford wardrobe patterns, and she made use of them.
That's so nice.
Yeah, yeah.
You do tips and tricks reels on Instagram, but
yeah,
you also mix in some satirical reels, which are so funny. So
yeah,
funny and so relatable. One of my favorite ones is where you talk about not rushing the craft of sewing, where you're going, I'm an artist, Mom. You can't rush an artist.
You can't rush art. This is my craft.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
I recommend people check your satirical reels out. Did you think that would become so iconic in the sewing community?
I've got stories behind this. So my Instagram was something that I kind of plodded along in the background for the first half of 2021. And then I got to the middle of 2021 and I thought, I actually really love this and I love filming these things and doing all this kind of stuff. And I want to make this more of a priority. So I kind of put more work into it and I found that like I could do them really easily. And I found
it came
like,
naturally to you.
Yeah, it really did. And so that, I would be scrolling through Instagram and I'd see a trending reel or something. And I'm like, oh my God, this is.
You can find a pun for sewing here.
Definitely.
Or yeah, some sort of connection to sewing.
You know, one of the recent ones was the audio is somebody crying. And the one I originally saw was somebody making a sandwich and it was like, point of view, you bought all the skincare things. And I was like, oh my gosh, where's my reels of thread? Where's my liberty? Where's my snips? Where's my bias binding? I've got to do this straight away. And I did it. And I was like, lol, this is funny. And it's like, point of view, you spent all your money on sewing things. And uploaded that. And it was kind of like, this is something that the sewing community can relate to really easily. And I think it brings out my personality a bit more of like, don't take yourself too seriously, like, all good. Because the sewing aspect of it can get a bit like too serious, I think, to a stage where you're constantly analyzing, oh, should I do this seam or that seam, or should I put this sleeve or balloon sleeve or not to elasticate or da da da. And it's just like sometimes you just gotta laugh. So with my reels, I love also doing all these little hacks, because it's often through trying different techniques, you can either find like the quicker way or like the cheats way to do it that you wouldn't have necessarily thought of until you saw it done.
Mm.
So, for example, there was one I did fairly recently about, instead of using an eyelet on like some sweatshirt fabric, you basically like sew a circle and you kind of, it's very,
yes, I saw that one.
It's difficult to explain verbally, but basically you use the same fabric as like a facing for a sweatshirt. And it's like, oh my gosh, where was this when I was doing my pajama set?
Yes.
Like, this is something I would totally use. And it was only through seeing other people do something similar that I was like, hang on, I think you can do it like this. Let me just see if it works. Oh my gosh, it does work out. Let's do this. The question I often get asked the most is about square necklines. So if you've got a square neckline, how do you kind of finish it off? So I'm always a facing always, because I think that's the most accurate representation of that shape. I know you can do it with bias binding, but it's quite tricky in the whole like folding and pressing and all that kind of stuff. And then because with bias binding, there's multiple ways you can use it. You can use it as a on the raw edge, or you can do it as a facing. And if you're using it on the raw edge, then it gets quite tricky when you get to the 90 degree angle. But if you're using it as a facing, you might as well have just made a facing. Does that make sense?
Oh, no.
All right.
I haven't done square necklines before. I imagine there's some clipping involved.
Yeah, there is quite a bit of clipping. I remember the first square neckline I did. It was for my birthday dress for my 25th birthday. It was a very cottagecore yellow and white gingham.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Gorgeous. And yeah, I still have it in my wardrobe, but it's such a striking dress, and it's such a occasional dress. I've not managed to wear it as much as I would like, but I think that's one of the garments I want to wear more of, going to hopefully warmer weather here in Melbourne.
It will warm up.
Oh, yes. Yes, I've been told when it gets warm, it gets hot.
All right, so let's have a quiz, Annie.
Yes.
Try to answer in one word or one sentence.
Okay.
True or false, you always sew over pins.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not ashamed to admit that.
No, not at all. And I'll tell you why. Because I've never had a bad experience. And I don't, and that is something that I've had messages and comments as in, no, you can never sew over pins because it might break.
Poke your eye out.
Yeah. Why do you think I wear glasses? No, but it's something I was taught, and I've never unlearned it. But I think you've got to be a certain kind of sewer to accept the risk.
And then you try it on and go, ow, what was that? Oh, the pin's still in there.
Oh, my gosh, the funniest thing I've ever heard is one of the girls I talked to, B Creates on Instagram. She had sewn a coat, and she was wearing it out one day, and she thought she got stung by a bee. It turned out it was a pin. It was a pin in her coat.
I hope she was able to get it out.
Yeah, I think
it wasn't stuck in the lining or something.
Oh gosh, but I laughed so much, and I was like, "Oh, that's such a sewer thing to do." But then I made my second Nova coat, and I did the same. And a trick for getting a pin out, if it's a really fine fabric and you cannot get it out, the trick is
cut a hole in the fabric.
No, that's a very last resort. One thing you can do, so it depends on what pin you've used. If you've used a dressmaker's pin with like a flat edge, it's kind of, I'm sorry, but you might have to unpick it. But if you've used a plastic head needle, what you do is you hold the pin and then you get like a hammer and smash the head of the pin.
Oh, wow.
And you can pull out the metal pin. And like, yes, you might have a bit of like remnants, but like if that is a last resort versus cutting or unpicking, you'll be okay. And it, like if you're wearing it for an event or something and you're like, God, I need to get this pin out and I don't have time, that's the trick.
You must have been very aggressive that day when you thought of that hack.
I'll tell you what, it's probably all the people who I say I shouldn't sew over pins being like, oh, right, that's what you get.
Do you prefer to sew with knits or wovens?
Wovens.
Does Liberty come in a knit?
It does come in a knit, and I have sewn with Liberty knits multiple times, but I would say a majority of my wardrobe is wovens, purely for the care of that garment and also the practicality of the garment. So, for example, like I know you can do like when I think of wovens, I think of knits, like merinos-esque. I don't automatically think of like sweatshirting because I have sewn pockets on sweatshirting, but I would never sew a pocket on a merino. Like, I know you can do it for like skirts or dresses, but then you're getting into the, oh, it's going to drag. It doesn't have the same look. And also I would say I wear wovens more, so I'm going to have more of those in my wardrobe, therefore I'm going to sew more of them.
This concept of one word or one sentence is a real struggle for me.
I do like a one word as woven. I do a paragraph of explanation as to why.
Do you like sewing for others? That's one of my questions. You can admit if you don't.
Yes, I do like sewing for others, but in special circumstances. I do enjoy sewing birthday presents and Christmas presents. I think that's a great use of my skill and my time and my ability to adapt a present to somebody's personalities, need, body, etc. But I also love sewing like little things, like a bag for someone where you don't have to know their body size or whatnot. I was renowned for sewing the Wilbur, the waste-free whale, for Christmas presents. I'll show you. So this is the little whale.
Oh,
he's very sweet. So I made a bunch of these little whales. I make them for like birthday presents or Christmas presents or whatnot as like a little addition. And for Christmas, so now everyone in my family has one of these little whales.
Oh.
Because like I had one. I made this little guy a few years ago, and he was just like in my bedroom, and he was, every time somebody came over they would notice him and it'd be all lovely and everything. And then I was just like, oh, so you're getting a whale now. You've mentioned him, you've seen him, you're getting a whale. For my sister, I made her a dress for her birthday, which is in November. And then in December for Christmas, she got a little whale with the same fabric that her dress was made out of. And it was stuffed with all the scraps of fabric that her dress was made out of. So it's kind of like a little reminder of the garment she had.
You know what you could make her? You could make her a whale pinata, so when she's angry at her husband, you say, there's pins in here, you just get a hammer and just smash the bastard and then pull all the pins out.
Yeah.
Therapeutic. Last question. Who invented the pavlova, Australia or New Zealand?
I think it was Australia. I'm sorry.
Actually think it was New Zealand.
I think it was Australia. I'll tell you what, because I gave pavlova to Australia, I'll give Lamington to New Zealand.
So. Oh, I'd rather claim that as our own.
I do make a good pavlova, though.
Thank you, Annie, for coming on the podcast and having a laugh with me.
Yeah, we've had a good one.
Thank you for listening to the Australia Sews podcast. If you know someone from Australia who would be great to have on the show, email australiasewspodcast@gmail.com or send me a message on Instagram @australiasews_podcast. You are more than welcome to nominate yourself. You can also find me on Instagram @make_thrift_sew. Now, back to sewing.